unemployment. And now, with the pandemic continuing more and more, the country is witnessing the ruling party's popularity sliding further. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Huge crowds from Damascus countryside flocked to mark the first martyrdom anniversary of Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Held in eastern Ghouta, once a hub for terrorists, residents attended the ceremony to pay tribute as a sign of gratitude for General Soleimani's key role in defeating terror in Syria. Iran's ambassador to Syria condemned the heinous assassination crime, underlining the importance of unity of Muslims against the U.S. and Israeli plots in the region.
They assassinated General Soleimani in a coward way. The crime is against all international laws. They did that because their plans had failed in the region. The assassination only brought them shame and defeat, and will lead to their expulsion from the region.
Speakers praised the general's support to Syria as a key factor for restoring security to many parts of the Arab country.
We have gathered here to honor the memory of Commander Soleimani, who offered Syria valuable services. General Soleimani is a historic hero whose achievements changed the region.
A photograph exhibition was also organized to shed light on General Soleimani's achievements in Syria and Iraq. General Soleimani, assassinated by the U.S. a year ago in Iraq, headed Iranian military advisors in Syria at its government's request, and for years played a pivotal role in defeating terrorism and liberating many towns and villages. In Syria, the memory of General Soleimani reminds everyone of the principles of sacrifice, brotherhood, friendship, and unity. This is just one of many ceremonies held in Syria to commemorate the general and convey a message of respect and appreciation to all his achievements. Hamad Ali, Damascus Countryside.
The executive director of Yemen's petroleum company has held a press conference in the capital Sana'a over Saudi Arabia's blockade. The officials say the company lost over $100 million in 2020 due to the Saudi-led coalition violations and siege, and accused the UN of complicity.
The United Nations is providing cover for the Saudi-led coalition's acts of piracy in international waters, and it bears full responsibility for them. The violations are huge, and the fines we have suffered are immense.
The senior official said nearly two dozen petrol ships belonging to Yemen's petroleum company were confiscated by Saudi Arabia in 2020. He said the seizures came despite the fact that the ships all had transit permits from the UN. Yemen's petroleum company said the ships were released after a few months, but Saudi Arabia's quota acts of piracy cost them millions of dollars in delay fines.
The United Nations has become a clear partner in this blockade against the Yemeni people and has come to stand by the coalition of aggression, so it bears responsibility for the humanitarian crisis.
Yemeni officials say the confiscation of ships caused a spike in fuel prices and forced the closure of some services. They also say the delays and lack of fuel pushed the medical sector to collapse and caused the humanitarian crisis. Many people have to wait for days to get fuel for their vehicle and the limited number of petrol stations.
Saudi Arabia's blockade of Yemen has led to the deaths of Yemeni people and is pushing the country further toward what the UN describes as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. This has taken place amid the silence of international organizations. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Saudi Arabia seems changing its diplomatic course with regard to neighboring Qatar as years-long blockade by Riyadh and some of its allies failed to force Doha to bow to their demands. The Kuwaiti foreign minister announced a diplomatic breakthrough, saying Saudi Arabia has decided to reopen its air, land, and sea borders to Qatar.
Based on a suggestion of Sheikh Nawaf Al Ahmed Al Sabah, Emir of the state, an agreement has been reached for the reopening of land and sea borders between the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the state of Qatar starting tonight.
Following the announcement, Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani accepted an invitation to attend a regional Arab summit in Saudi Arabia. Upon his arrival to the Saudi city of Al Ula, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman gave a warm welcome to Sheikh Tamim. In the summit, the leaders of the six-member Persian Gulf Cooperation Council signed a rapprochement agreement, although the details were not immediately released.
These efforts helped us reach the agreement of the Al Ula statement that will be signed at this summit, where we affirm our Arab and Islamic solidarity and stability.
During the meeting, however, bin Salman missed no chance to repeat his anti-Iran rhetoric, describing Tehran's missile program as a threat to the region. But what actually had caused the conflict between Doha and Riyadh? In June 2017, Saudi Arabia, together with Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, and Egypt, accused Qatar, among other things, of meddling in regional affairs and supporting terrorism. They cut ties and transferred links with Qatar. Ironically, Saudi Arabia is accused of the same charges it has leveled against Qatar. Doha also repeatedly denied the allegations and said it was targeted because it followed an independent foreign policy. The boycotting countries then issued a list of 13 demands to Doha, including a downgrade in relations with Iran and the closure of the Al Jazeera television news network in return for the reconciliation. Qatar has not publicly bowed to any of the demands. Saudi Arabia has constantly pursued the policy of fueling regional tensions. Some of its allegations against Qatar even demonstrated Saudi hypocrisy, as the kingdom has long been engaged in regional conflicts. While its interference in Libya and Bahrain, as well as its anti-Iran rhetoric, is not hidden anymore, the kingdom's full-fledged war on impoverished Yemen has also exposed its hegemonic agenda. Undoubtedly, Riyadh's decision to ease the Qatar blockade proves the failure of its policy of siege and aggression. However, the credit goes to Doha, that stood firm against what it called bullying by some Arab states, and so were the Qatari citizens, who seemed galvanized by patriotic feelings.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's army kicked off a maneuver that put to test hundreds of its domestically built unmanned aerial vehicles. The two-day military exercises saw the use of a variety of surveillance and reconnaissance drones, combat drones, bombers, and loitering munitions, which are known as suicide drones. As part of the drill, the Persian Gulf was simulated as the conflict zone, where the Iranian Army's Navy used the suicide drones to destroy their targets.
All of the four forces of the army took part in the drills by deploying their drones. Each force concentrated on their assigned missions. We at the Navy used a variety of our stealth drones that can fly deep into the enemy's waters and keep a close eye on their activities.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's defense industry has been hit by U.S. arms embargoes for four decades. The sanctions have barred Iran from purchasing any foreign weapons, even from its closest allies. However, Iranian officials say the country's defense sector is up and running. The reason is the country has for all these years been developing its own arms based on domestic capabilities. And now, drones are the epitome of Iran's advances in the defense industry.
In the field of UAVs, Iran is neck and neck with the few countries that have the technology. We began by producing surveillance UAVs, but today, our unmanned aircraft can conduct combat missions as well. And we owe this achievement to US sanctions, because they forced us to rely on our domestic resources.
The Islamic Republic stepped into the field of UAV production around 2011 by reverse engineering American and Israeli drones it electronically commandeered or shot down. Tehran says today it is self-sufficient in designing, producing, and operating a range of UAVs with different applications. In less than a decade, the term UAV grew from an alien word to a keyword in Iran's airspace. Still, the Iranian army says this is just the tip of the iceberg, and the greater part of Iran's defense capabilities is yet to be publicized.
The Prime Minister made the announcement Monday. The country will be going back to its 2020 mantra, stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. Boris Johnson warned there were going to be tough weeks ahead, but still offered a ray of hope.
The weeks ahead will be the hardest yet. But I really do believe that we're entering the last phase of the struggle, because with every jab that goes into our arms, we are tilting the odds against COVID and in favor of the British people. And thanks to the miracle of science, not only is the end in sight, but we know exactly how we will get there.
Some children across England had one day in school before the announcement was made, and people are vexed by yet another last-minute announcement. The opposition says the government is going to make mistakes, but to make the same mistakes again is unacceptable. But Boris Johnson insists the tier system was working and that the new variant of COVID-19 is what derailed it. The Prime Minister's remarks caused hashtags resign, school closures, and Boris has failed the UK to shoot to the top of the country's Twitter trending charts. He is accused of ignoring the science by insisting schools are safe. The third lockdown will be hard for families juggling work and school, but many companies in the leisure, retail and hospitality sectors feel they might not make it through to the spring. In response to these fears, the Chancellor of the Exchequer made an announcement Tuesday.
Well, in order to help support businesses through a difficult period through to the spring, today we've announced £4.6 billion of additional help. For businesses in the most affected sectors who are asked to close, they will receive up to £9,000 in a one-off cash grant. It's important to remember that comes on top of the existing monthly grant of £3,000 that those businesses receive and the extension of furlough all the way through to April. You know, we remain committed to protecting jobs and supporting businesses.
The new COVID-19 restrictions come days after the UK and the EU reached a trade and security agreement as part of their Brexit divorce deal, and businesses in Britain had to start trading differently. They were dreading this, but now they say planning around COVID-19 restrictions has made the extra paperwork surrounding post-Brexit trade pale into insignificance. Bianca Rahimi, London.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of a televised speech delivered on July 31st, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of Eid al-Adha.
As for the second goal, giving the wrong address, this is how some do it. They say that if we want sanctions to be lifted, we should come to terms with the US. The gist of what they say is that we should get along with the US and stop resisting. Later, I will explain this more. This is how their distortion orientation functions. Of course, I will tell you that it affects some individuals as they repeat what they say. This happens in the case of the country's weak points, which are magnified tens of times in the case of underplaying the country's strong points and achievements, and in the case of giving the wrong address. Well, this touches some individuals, but it does not affect the majority of the Iranian nation. The majority of the people know the US and the enemy. They know that they are lying and that they have ulterior motives. Therefore, the distortion movement has not produced the desired results for them.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Grant me faith to be stronger.
Anyone in Krami, Sayyidul Akwam.
I will tell you that if the distortion movement fails, the sanctions movement will definitely fail as well. This is because the arena is an arena and a war of wills. When the truth distortion movement fails, and when the Iranian nation's willpower remains firm and strong, the nation will certainly overcome the enemy's will, and it will win. This is the second point. The third point is that, as I said, sanctions are undoubtedly a crime committed by the U.S. They are a blow delivered on the Iranian nation at the hands of the U.S. However, ingenious Iranians have made the most of this attack and this enmity.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hoped for nothing but bounty, and from whom I feared nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans, and I seek protection in thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For thou art Allah, the best guardian, and thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to thee, addressing myself to thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to you for the hope of your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of thy creation, the summoner to thy truth. Exalt me with thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with thy eye, which never sleeps, and seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
The debate.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the country is in no rush for the U.S. to return to the 2015 nuclear deal. In a televised address, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said Iran's logical demand is the removal of sanctions, calling the sanctions a crime and treason against the Iranian people. Supporting Iran's decision to roll back its commitments, he said, "The other side does not implement any of its commitments. There is no point for Iran to fulfill all of its commitments," adding, "If they return to the commitments, we will do the same." The leader further pointed to Iran's regional presence, stressing Iran will continue to reinforce its regional allies. Ayatollah Khamenei referred to the recent chaos in the U.S. and said Washington is always after creating instability in other countries, and now it's happened on its own soil.
On Friday, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, came down hard on the United States and its allies over their years-long sanctions against the Iranian people. Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that the measures are based on a baseless animosity and have to be lifted right away. Iran's leader noted that setting conditions for the removal of sanctions is nonsense. He said a possible U.S. return to the 2015 nuclear deal would be meaningless if the sanctions stay in place. Ayatollah Khamenei threw his weight behind the recent move by the Iranian government to scale down its commitments under the deal known as the JCPOA, saying that Tehran will not accept any obligations without reciprocal measures, adding that it would be meaningless for the Islamic Republic to implement all its commitments under the JCPOA when the other side implements almost none of its. Ayatollah Khamenei slammed comments made by some Western countries over Iran's regional policies. He stressed that Tehran will continue to play its role for regional stability, like its recent contribution to Iraq and Syria that led to the defeat of the Daesh terrorist group there. The Iran leader said that it is the U.S. that finds its interest in destabilizing the region, noting that such plots have been explicitly stated by some American thinkers, including someone from the American Enterprise Institute. Speaking on Iran's defense capabilities, Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the country is strong enough now to deter a war similar to the one launched by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein with arms and backing of the West in the 1980s. Iran's leader then touched upon recent developments surrounding the U.S. presidential election, saying the so-called American values and democracy have turned into a laughingstock even among American friends. He said what happened in Washington, D.C. was the very thing Americans were planning to incite in Iran over a decade ago.
Joining us on this debate, we have political analyst Mr. John Bosnich joining us from New York, also from the Iranian capital, Tehran. We have journalist and commentator Mostafa Khoshchesh. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with our guest in Tehran, Mr. Khoshchesh. Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says the Islamic Republic is not in a rush for the U.S. to return to the 2015 nuclear deal. Does that indicate, in your opinion, that the so-called maximum pressure campaign has failed to achieve its goals?
Hello, Barry, and thanks for having me. Well, true. Maximum pressure policy failed back in May when even former National Security Advisor of the United States, John Bolton, admitted that pressures had failed to subdue Tehran, and then they changed Brian Hooks, who was in charge of the Iran dossier or Iran's policy in the U.S. Administration. It's no secret that the U.S. needs to change the strategy, but it's pretty well understood that the U.S. would continue the same containment strategy that started under President Obama. And President Trump never, you know, went astray much. Actually, he also resorted to this strategy, continued this strategy that works through sanctions and posing credible military threat alongside other threats, cyber attacks, and so on and so forth, in order to pressure Tehran into talks. Then, as a result of talks, they've won several agreements on Iran's missile program, regional power, the future of Iran's nuclear industries, human rights, guaranteeing Israel security, and many other issues, as even President-elect Biden has said. So the two sides are now at a war of willpower, and Tehran says that despite what they think, that Iran is an urgent need for a removal of sanctions, and Iran is in a rush. Tehran is in no rush. Actually, Tehran has just started, maximizing its efforts and plan under the resistance or the active resistance strategy. At a time when the United States' maximum pressure is going down in terms of its effects and impacts and results, and the pressures would lower down and decrease. As we've seen, Iran has been exporting crude to Venezuela. 10 Iranian ships are said to be on the way to Venezuela carrying petrol and other petroleum products. And Iran, at such a juncture, Iran has just started increasing its pressures on the United States, and the start of 20% enrichment, uranium enrichment, is just one of the Iranian pressure leverages. So time now works in Iran's interest, I believe.
Let's get a word from our guest in New York, Mr. Bosnich. Ayatollah Khamenei says Iran's logical demand is the removal of sanctions. He says that's the right of the Iranian people, which has been stolen. Well, after that, a U.S. return would make sense. What is your perspective on those comments?
Well, first, I'd like to reinforce the position of your other guest today. The sanctions have proven to be ineffective completely, as they generally and usually are. People need to remember that more than half of this planet is almost continuously under United States imperial sanctions. It's not just Iran, it's Russia, it's China, in some parts it's India, it's parts of Africa, it's parts of South America. In fact, my native Canada has actually come under U.S. trade restrictions in the past. So the tactic of people-directed, in other words, because sanctions actually hit the normal people, people-directed sanctions is almost always a failure, and it develops hatred towards the United States by the victim peoples. So that tactic does not work. It's been proven time and time again, but it's a way to keep the warmongers happy in the Pentagon that something is being done. So that's the first starting point. Now, when we go ahead to the question of Iran's logical demands, every country in the world has something that's called sovereignty. That means independence and freedom at the state level. We live in a very unbalanced world. We have a few countries which are exorbitantly rich. We have many countries which are extremely poor. And then we have states that are in the middle, like Iran and various other countries, which have great potential to advance if they're given a fair chance in competition. It is logical that Iran, as a country, Iran is a historic world-leading country. So it is only logical and natural and a necessary exercise of sovereignty for Iran to develop its science and technology, to develop its national defense. I mean, Iran has been bombed by Israel in peacetime. So Iran has these inherent rights, and these rights are not just something special for Iran. They're guaranteed under the UN Charter, and in fact, the United Nations is supposed to intervene in Iran's favor if anyone violates Iran's sovereignty. So I would say that not only has the sovereignty of Iran been infringed upon through these coercive techniques of sanctions, but Iran has to be credited for having immense patience, given the fact that the American side withdrew from a treaty which it dictated to Iran.
Sure.
This is not a complex story, and people who claim to not understand Iran's position must not be trusted.
Okay, Mr. Khoshish, on the JCPOA, Iran, it's time and again said, if the U.S. doesn't implement its commitments, and it's not just the U.S., it's the E3 signatories as well, it would be meaningless for Iran to implement its part of the deal. This stance against Iran, it's always been inconsistent and hypocritical, hasn't it?
Ah, yes, true. You know, this is not the first time that Iran and the Europeans or the United States have struck deal. There have been so many agreements between the two sides, at least four or five in the past 20 years. And in all these cases, Tehran has been in compliance with the, has held up its end of the bargain. And the other side has defied the terms of the agreement. One of the best known cases was back in 2004 to 2006 when Iran struck three separate agreements over its nuclear industries with the three European states. And Iran was acknowledged by the Europeans as well as the IAEA to be in full compliance with the agreements, with its undertakings under these three agreements. But at the end of the day, the Europeans told Tehran when they were asked to comply with their promises and with their undertakings, they said that they cannot do anything because they don't have the permission of the United States, and they told Tehran to go and talk with the United States, and eventually everything, collapsed, all the three agreements, because they never complied with their undertakings. One of those agreements pertained to the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol. It started in the last 2 years of President Khatami, the reformist president, and at the end of his presidency, when they defied their undertakings, he himself restarted, ordered the resumption of Iran's nuclear activities and the end of the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol, which happens to be one of the main merits of the deal for the United States and the IAEA and the Europeans, even under the JCPOA, because it's true that Iran stayed loyal to the nuclear deal for quite a long time, but after 14 months after the United States withdrew from the deal and the Europeans never complied with their promises, Tehran started modifying its undertakings, but not all its undertakings. Iran is still complying with one-third of its commitments. That includes the additional protocol to the NPT. Iran is fulfilling it on a voluntary basis. Iran has warned, according to a parliament approval, which was ratified a few weeks ago, they have warned that if the Europeans continue the same case, if the U.S. defines its undertakings, then the same experience would repeat itself. Like 2006, Iran would stop the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol. So there is going to be much cost if the Europeans and Americans do not fulfill their promises and defy their undertakings.
Mr. Bosnich, I believe we lost that connection. I'm going to address that question to you as well, Mr. Khoshesh. Ayatollah Khamenei has also spoke about Iran's regional presence in his latest address. He said, unlike the U.S. and other foreign presences in the region, Tehran has helped improve regional security, and Iran will continue reinforcing its regional friends. Now, we've seen that with the fight against Daesh and other Takfiri terrorist groups. Who exactly, can you tell us, feels threatened by Iran's regional influence and presence?
Sure, Israel. But let's remember that many Europeans should be thankful, even American people, average citizens, they should be thankful to martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, the two martyrs in the Iranian IRGC, Quds Force Anti-Terrorism Units, as well as the popular forces who fought Daesh that was created by the United States allies. If it hadn't been for their efforts, then these militants, these terrorists, would have been killing Europeans in the undergrounds, in Brussels, in Paris, in London, in everywhere, in Spain, Madrid, in the United States, as they did on several occasions. But they stopped because they were hunted down by this man, by Haj Qasem Soleimani, the lieutenant general. If the United States and its allies can never deny the very clear-cut facts that they were in charge of creating Daesh, they have admitted that, they have acknowledged that, and I've repeatedly been saying, because I do not want this to be forgotten by the people in the West, that General Michael Flynn, that General Dempsey, who was the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff of the United States, Jake Sullivan, who's now the National Security Advisor, and many others, Hillary Clinton, and many others, they have admitted that it was the United States ally, main ally, Saudi Arabia, as well as a number of others, like Qatar and Turkey, they started this mess in the Middle East, and they trained, they supported, and they created Daesh. And according to General Michael Flynn, who told Al Jazeera America, that after he was the head of the Pentagon Intelligence Department, he said that we knew Daesh was being created by our allies in eastern Syria and western Iraq, but we took no action. We informed the Obama White House, not the Trump, but Obama White House, and we never took any action because they wanted to destabilize the region according to the book, according to the confession made by Michael Levin in his book back in 2006.
Mr. Khoshesh, I'm sorry I'm going to interrupt you there. We've got our guest, Mr. Bosnich. Yeah. Back from New York, Mr. Bosnich, Tehran says the interests of the U.S. and its allies are rooted in regional stability. An individual by the name of Michael Arthur Ladin, who's a former consultant to the United States National Security Council, United States Department of State, and the United States Department of Defense, who is with the American Enterprise Institute, he says in one of his books that, quote, "A stability is an unworthy American mission and a misleading concept, too. We do not want stability in Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and even Saudi Arabia. We want things to change. The real issue is not whether but how to destabilize? Why is instability in the region the method of choice for the United States?
It's not just in the Iran region. My paternal ancestors came from the former Yugoslavia, and that obviously is a picture of what the United States does to a region, ripping apart stable countries, arming multiple sides in conflicts, disrupting interhuman relations in a region, of course starting with trade embargoes. How does this serve the United States? Well, we've got to stop talking about the United States here. It doesn't serve the United States. It doesn't serve the people of America. What it does is it serves the ruling clique that runs America. That's the concept that people don't discuss. You know, having grown up until my late 20s in Canada, just an hour's drive from the American border, Canada is considered quite a weak power beside America. But even we have been on the receiving end of American economic and political pressures. They interfere in our political system. They interfere in our economic system. They, you know, maybe people in Iran don't know this. In major centers in Canada, we have 70 to 80 or maybe even 100 television stations available over cable and over satellite. More than 5% of those television and radio stations as well are all from America. So we are being propagandized and gradually turned into Americans. We speak the same language. We have similar standards for automobiles and lifestyle. And actually, we're being assimilated the peaceful way. If we were to resist the use of our resources, as Iran has resisted the unpaid use of its oil resources for decades, we would be the subject of the same kind of actions as Iran has been subjected to. Coup d'etats, foreign control over regimes, and so on. So this has to be perceived not in the perspective of a battle between the people of Iran and the people of America. It's not. I personally, as a Canadian who I worked in Japan for 20 years, I was the advisor to the Japanese Prime Minister's office. I, in Japan, as a journalist, worked together with very close and trustworthy, open Iranian friends who told me firsthand about what it's like in your country. So I can tell you that you are not alone. Okay. And what you are going through is the kind of things that many of us go through, but not at the level that you've been subjected.
All right, thanks a lot. Sorry to interrupt you there. We're short of time for tonight's program. I'd like to thank my guest, political analyst John Bozich, joining us from New York. Also, thanks to journalist and commentator Mostafa Khoshchesh, speaking to us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Also, special thanks to you for staying with us on this debate.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. Twitter has permanently suspended the account of President Donald Trump, citing its repeated violations of the company's rules and risk, including the further incitement of violence. Twitter assessed two tweets sent by Trump on Friday morning, 8th of January, as highly likely to encourage and inspire people to replicate the criminal acts that took place on the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January 2021, the company said in a statement. Plans for future armed protests are spreading on Twitter and elsewhere, the company warned, including a proposed secondary attack on the U.S. Capitol building and state capitol buildings on 17th of January 2021. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalists Julia Carey Wong and Carrie Paul. The piece is titled, Twitter Permanently Suspend Trump's Account to Prevent Further Incitement of Violence. Stay with us for more of Julia Carey Wong and Carrie Paul's article. Twitter has permanently suspended the account of President Donald Trump, citing his repeated violations of the company's rules and risks, including the further incitement of violence. Twitter assessed two tweets sent by Donald Trump on Friday morning, 8th of January, as highly likely to encourage and inspire people to replicate the criminal acts that took place at the U.S. Capitol building on 6th of January 2021. The company said in a statement, plans for future armed protests are spreading on Twitter and elsewhere, the company warned, including a proposed secondary attack on the U.S. Capitol building and state capitol buildings on 17th of January 2021. Twitter's extraordinary decision to ban Donald Trump's personal account carries pinpointed symbolism for the embattled president, whose use of social media to stoke hatred and fear fueled both his unlikely political rise and his presidency's ignominious end. It comes just 2 days after a mob of Donald Trump's supporters violently stormed the U.S. Capitol, wreaking havoc in an attack that has resulted in at least 5 deaths. Even as the rampage continued, Donald Trump tweeted in praise of the rioters, prompting Twitter to temporarily suspend his account, with a warning that any further infractions would lead to a permanent ban from Twitter. On Thursday, 7th of January, Facebook banned Donald Trump from posting on its platforms, at least through to Joe Biden's inauguration on 20th of January, citing the risk of inciting violence, a move that increased pressure on Twitter to finally unplug the erratic president's bullhorn. Other social media companies have scurried to deplatform Donald Trump and his most violent supporters. Google, for example, removed the right-wing social network Parler from its app store, citing the platform's role in inciting violence. Among those calling for Donald Trump's suspension were 350 of Twitter's own employees, according to a report by the Washington Post. In the context of horrific events this week, we made it clear on Wednesday that additional violations of the Twitter rules would potentially result in this very course of action, Twitter said in its statement. Our determination is that the two tweets are likely to inspire others to replicate the violent acts that took place on 6th of January 2021, and that there are multiple indicators that they are being received and understood as encouragement to do so. Twitter's decision was hailed by Donald Trump's critics and lambasted by his remaining supporters. Many civil rights advocates who have long argued that platforms should cease allowing Donald Trump to use their platforms to spread bigotry seized the opportunity to call on Facebook and YouTube to follow suit. On Friday evening, 8th of January, Donald Trump used multiple other Twitter accounts, including the official presidential account at POTUS and his campaign account at Team Trump, in an attempt to tweet his complaints about the ban, but the tweets were quickly taken down. A Twitter spokesperson said that Donald Trump was not allowed to use other accounts to evade his ban, and that the company would continue to remove his tweets. The campaign account at Team Trump was permanently banned from Twitter. Twitter said it would not suspend government accounts such as POTUS or White House, but might limit their use. This is the outcome of years of inaction, said Joanne Donovan, an expert in misinformation and research director at Harvard University Shorenstein Center. Technology companies have assumed for far too long that their products are neutral, but political elites and the millionaires behind them knew this assumption could be weaponized. This is a major failure of those who built this technology and claimed they could secure it. In a statement that provided unprecedented detail about Twitter's decision-making process, Twitter made it apparent that Donald Trump's months-long campaign of using Twitter to promote and amplify baseless conspiracy theories about the legitimacy of the presidential election had led directly to his suspension. Donald Trump's two final tweets read, "The 75 million great American patriots who voted for me, America First and Make America Great Again, will have a giant voice long into the future. They will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape, or form." The second tweet read, "To all those who have asked, I will not be going to the inauguration on 20th of January." While those statements may appear relatively innocuous in comparison to some of Donald Trump's recent heightened rhetoric, Twitter said that the president's most avid and conspiracy-minded followers were not reading them as such during the particularly dangerous time. The decision not to attend the inauguration is being received by a number of his supporters as further confirmation that the election was not legitimate and may serve as encouragement to those potentially considering violent acts that the inauguration would be a safe target as Donald Trump will not be attending, Twitter said in a statement. Additionally, Trump's references to his supporters as American patriots who must not be disrespected or treated unfairly was being interpreted as an endorsement of the rioters and support of those who continue to reject the orderly transition of power. Donald Trump is by no means alone in bearing responsibility for dangerous proliferation of disinformation on Twitter for many months. Though the platform carried out a broad crackdown on accounts and content relating to the QAnon conspiracy theorists in July, it has allowed a host of QAnon influencers to build massive audiences spreading baseless conspiracies on Twitter. Conspiracies about the election and supposed voter fraud in last November's election. Well-known figures such as former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, Trump attorney Sidney Powell, and the 8chan administrator Ron Watkins and attorney Lynn Wood have spent weeks stoking the flames of QAnon-inflected election conspiracy theories on Twitter, with their false allegations reaching both masses of Trump supporters and Donald Trump himself. On Friday, Twitter permanently suspended the accounts of Michael Flynn, Sidney Powell, and Ron Watkins for violating its policy against coordinated harmful activity. Lynn Wood was suspended on Thursday. "We've been clear that we will take strong enforcement action on behavior that has the potential to lead to offline harm, and given the renewed potential for violence surrounding this type of behavior in the coming days, we will permanently suspend accounts that are solely dedicated to sharing QAnon content," a Twitter spokesperson said in a statement.
Good morning. news from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB.